Welcome, my friend. You've made it to episode 325 of the 200 Churches podcast.
I think right now we have some of the greatest opportunities we've ever had to expand the gospel and communicate the message that God's given us. Jesus actually said, go into the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. And we have more tools now than ever to actually do that. And so for us, it takes leaders in the church, whether you're a volunteer, part-time pastor, full-time pastor, small church, big church, you care about the message, right? We all care about the message. We have the greatest message in the world. So we don't have a message problem. We actually just have a message delivery problem. And that's not just for the communications person to be able to own all that. That's really everybody's job. And so we all have a role to play in that. Change isn't easy, but it's worth it when you know that the things that you communicate now may look different than it did 30 years ago, but now there's actually opportunities to reach more people than ever before, but it does take maybe a different playbook.
Welcome to the 200 Churches podcast. We're passionate about providing ministry encouragement to pastors of small churches. We release a brand new episode every Wednesday to do just that for you, all of our small church pastor friends. Now here are two guys who are definitely better together, friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches podcast. My name is Jeff Cady. I am here in the studio with my good friend and podcast partner, Jonathan Craig. Also, we're here with Phil Bowdle, the author of Rethink Communication. And I'm also here with my executive assistant, Kathy Pankton. Now, you're about to hear the recording that we did with Phil just days ago. And this is a great conversation talking about rethinking communication in the church, and particularly, you know how we roll, in the small church. So Phil has written this book, Rethink Communication. He is a creative arts pastor in the Atlanta area at Westridge Church, and he spent some time putting this book together for normal size churches as well, with normal size church pastors on his mind, like his dad was. And so this is a very encouraging conversation, also instructive. Phil gives a lot of practical ways that we can improve communication in our church. So sit back and relax, or keep working out, or keep walking, running, jogging, biking, swimming, whatever it is you're doing, listening to this podcast, you're going to love it. Here's our conversation with Phil Bowdle.
We're here with Phil Bowdle, who is an author and communication guru extraordinaire. How do you feel about that, Phil? Do you like that as a tag?
Hey, that's a good intro. Yeah, that's good. I'll take it.
Phil, tell us about yourself. Jeff would always want to know about your family. I'm more interested in your work. That's why we're a good team together. So you can get into all of it. Introduce yourself to our listeners.
Right. That's great. Well, so I am the creative arts pastor over at Westridge Church, which is in Northwest Atlanta. So that's my primary calling. What I get to do is lead and shepherd a team of creatives here. And ultimately, what we just want to do, everything we do as a church, we just want to make sure we're putting Jesus on display and let him do the rest. So that is the primary calling that I get to do. But I also get to do some writing. And so, as you mentioned, just got to write my first full book, which is Rethink Communication. And so just recently got to be able to release that. But I also get to do some coaching and consulting with churches of all sizes to just try to help them figure out the ever-changing world of communications and creative, to just help people kind of hopefully provide a playbook for how they can use these things to leverage the gospel in their church and community.
And your family, Phil?
Family. So have a four-year-old.
Oh, yeah, them.
yeah, so for sure be praying for me. So, yeah, four-year-old that – is wired a lot like me, so it's dangerous. So love him. His name's Ethan. And then we just had a baby girl. So she is 3 months old, so, and not sleeping. So if I just doze off here in a little bit, just be patient with me, make a loud noise, and I'll be right back with you.
That's cool,
That's
Phil.
Awesome. Two kids. Good for you.
I've got a granddaughter who's just about your daughter's age. So I see what my son is going through, and you're probably going through the same thing.
Absolutely. Hey, yeah, fun times.
I'm going to kick this off with this question for you. As soon as I picked up your book and started reading it, I recognized immediately the readability factor that you superimposed on every page. Now, Johnny would write stuff, and he'd have these long, thick dense paragraphs. And I would always say to him, Johnny, you got like cut this into like three or four paragraphs because it's readability. Talk to us about readability and why you put 5-inch margins in your, well, maybe not 5-inch, okay, but some, you know, margins, and you don't crunch everything together. What is the strategy there?
Well, there's two things. One, if you're going to write on a book on communication and how to use that and leverage that in the church, you should probably use some good communication principles.
Yes.
So that was a goal of mine, you know, for sure, is I wanted to apply what I learned for myself as well. So that's a big piece. But the other reality, and don't tell anybody this, actually, I don't read a whole lot of books. Most of the time I'm consuming audiobooks or podcasts primarily. So I wanted to read a book that I wish somebody else had written, you know, in that way, and try to do it in a style that would be approachable and easy. Because I know the church leaders that I speak to, for some, maybe it's just the ones that I speak to, but most of them don't have a ton of time on their hands to sit down for, you know, 10, 15 hours and do something like read a dense book. So I just wanted to make something that was really approachable and really, really practical, and have something in there for the pastor, for the volunteer, the church leader, anybody that has a message to communicate and a heart to communicate it to more people. Just really wanted to remove any barriers I could to make it easy and approachable and really helpful.
Well, it is. The layout is very cool. It's funny that you say you listen to audiobooks because, and I mean this in a loving way, Phil, this book would suck as an audiobook. It's full of graphs and graphics and all sorts of, you know, breakout pull quotes and things like that. And I think for a man who listens to Audible books, this is would not translate maybe the easiest.
Yeah, it's actually the number one question I've gotten since I've released the book is this going to be an Audible or an audiobook? And it would be hard to translate for sure. But I also do a lot of design. I designed the book myself, so it was easier for me kind of translate it in a way to make sure the stuff that I wanted to pop out popped out.
That's very cool. I'm looking at this book, and you know, our audience is small church pastors, Phil, and I actually think a book like this is perfect for small church pastors because they can pick it up, they can read it, they can learn it, and they can do it. But for me, I'm thinking if I pick this up and read it, I might just become super frustrated with my church's communication strategy. But I am not the communications director. So I would have to give it to them and encourage them to learn how to
use
it.
Which means you'd have to buy another copy, Johnny.
Phil,
see
would
the
like
strategy
that.
Here?
Yeah, I do understand that. Who did you write this book for exactly?
To give you a little context, my dad is a retired Methodist pastor, so I grew up in the church and primarily small church, you know, of basically 200 to 500 people or so. I wanted to write something that would be helpful for my dad if he was still you know, an active pastor right now. So that was one part of my heart, of just knowing, goodness, there's so much on that senior pastor in the church that they've got to wear so many different hats. So that was really essential for me. But I also know from leading, you know, the creative communication side in the church, and just that being a big heartbeat of mine, of my calling, is there's a ton of people out there that got their start in their role because they had an Apple computer and were the creative in the church, and suddenly they're thrusted into, hey, you're the communications lead for our church.
Right.
And so I wanted to be practical for that person too, and also for the ministry leader who's a youth pastor that is shepherding 30 different people, you know, in their student ministry, or 300 or 3,000, doesn't matter. The thing that every one of those audiences have is they all are passionate about the message they have to communicate, but they're also, all of them are faced with a really frustrating reality, is that people are attending and engaging with the church very differently than they used to, and their attention span and how they're communicated to looks so different now than it did even 10 years ago.
Sure.
And so the issue of communication really is central to every single one of those audiences. So in my heart, what drove a lot of this for me is my goal was I wanted to be able to anticipate a senior pastor, a ministry leader, and a communications leader sitting down at a Starbucks, being able to have something that would actually help them navigate this tough area of communication and be helpful for all of them. So that's kind of who I wrote it for.
That's very cool. I'm going to tell you, Phil, I'm you know, I'm in the book and I'm looking through, and you have one chapter here that one of my elders at my church, the name of this chapter would make his heart go pitter-patter. He would just be, he'd be ecstatic if we would take the name of this chapter to heart. And the name of this chapter is Quit Doing Announcements. Quit Doing Announcements. Can you talk me through, can I start here, way in the back of your book with Quit Doing Announcements? Talk me through the idea here and why I should quit and maybe what I should do instead.
In all my years in the church, which literally started from day one, like I've probably missed only a handful of Sundays in my life. And in all those years, I've never heard somebody walking out of church saying, wow, those announcements were amazing today. Like, that was my favorite part of the whole service. When that pastor got up and read that bulletin for 15 minutes, that just moved my heart in ways that nothing else has. Like, it just doesn't happen that way. And I think what's happened is through the years, we have assumed that we have people's attention when we have their attendance or when we have a brief moment with them. And so our thought is, okay, we have to think like staff members for this moment and get as many things out as we can so that they know about it. And the reality is now is our culture is usually, most of us are seeing over 10,000 branded messages every single day. And so what's happened is we all have built a little bit of a filter to kind of tune those things out. And so we don't notice those things anymore that are just that feel like advertisements. I mean, if you're watching TV and you have a fast forward button for your DVR, you're not probably sitting there saying, oh, no, I want to make sure I don't miss the commercial. And so in some ways, a lot of people in our churches are doing the same thing. So when it feels like an announcement, when it feels like something that you want from people instead of what you want for them. And so what I encourage people in the book there to do is to stop thinking about announcements, quit doing announcements, and start doing next steps. When you're communicating as a church, if you're doing announcements after the message or something like that, make sure your announcements are practical and helpful next steps to what you've been communicating that day or the next steps that you are laying out for your church as a whole to help them grow in their relationship with Jesus.
So, Phil, you said a couple things there quickly I think are really important. You said, what do we want for people and not from people?
Correct. Yeah. Right?
So do our announcements or does our communication seek to find what we want for them instead of what we want from them? And then I knew I was going to forget this. Then the second thing, you just said it. What was that second thing you just said?
It was really good. I'm not sure which part.
Oh, it was so good too. It was so you can keep going and I'll interrupt you when I remember it.
It is really difficult when you're leading in the church because you are so passionate about what you want more people to experience and so our tendency is to just use that announcement time thinking of it like a staff member. Thinking of it like, okay, we need all these people to know all these things so that they can come and engage and experience the incredible opportunities you have as a church. And so I think what the filter I try to use of moving away from what we want from people to what we want for them is I really want to think how I would share these opportunities with somebody, with a neighbor who's coming for the first time to our church. Because we've all had those moments where you bring somebody with you to some kind of experience and all of a sudden your senses are heightened like crazy because your nose, all these things you didn't notice before. And what happens when you don't think about it, about that person in the church, is you lose your sensitivity to the people that are actually that you're trying to help in the first place. And so if you can think about how you would communicate those things to somebody that's coming for the first time, that's probably more the filter that you want to use to communicate that, because you're going to share, here's the value it's going to provide. Here's the why behind it. So we focus, announcements are all about what's next steps, and opportunities like this that we can share are really about the why. It's here's why this is going to help you in your relationship with God. And if it's not something that would answer that question, it's probably not something you should be announcing. You know, it's not something I can't find anything in scripture that said, you know, thou shall have at least five announcements in each service. right. So our focus on as our church is we want to make sure that we can use each Sunday of the year to communicate what are the one to two most important things that we want everybody to know in our church. And if there isn't something super important, like this upcoming Sunday for us at our church, we have zero announcements in our service plan. And I love that because it just means we've found other ways to communicate these things to make sure that our worship service is that. It's a worship service to help point people to Jesus instead of filling up their calendars. So
well, no announcements. See, we're We're afraid that no announcements means that there's nothing going on. How will anybody know there's anything going on in the church if we don't, like, tell them about it?
That's a great question. Great question. And I've got that feedback before. And here's what I would say is that is built, that kind of idea is built around a model that assumed that people were coming to your church every single Sunday. And the reality is most people, like the average attendance of people is going from what we used to think was weekly to now the average person that's attending a lot of churches may be coming every 7 to 8 weeks sometimes. So, you know, you're talking about somebody that's coming, you know, maybe once to twice a month at best for the average attender.
Yeah.
And so what the people are asking when they're coming into your church is not, hey, how can I find more things to keep me busy? No, they're actually looking for clarity from you. They're looking for, you know, what do you want for them, and how can the opportunities you have in your church help point them to Jesus? And so I don't think anybody's going to be disappointed if they don't have five different times to come back to the church the next week, because they probably aren't doing that in the first place. What you want to do is provide a great, great experience for them that's going to be helpful and shepherd them in their walk with God. And then use that to point them towards the next Sunday or the next opportunity that you have for them. So it's okay if they don't feel like there's, you know, a full calendar of things for them, because ideally you want people connected in just a couple core areas of the life of your church, whether that's your Sunday gatherings and small groups or something like that, because people aren't going to be coming every single week, most likely.
No, very true. Hey, Phil, Kathy Pankhnen is here, and this will be, Kathy, this is your debut on the podcast.
Hey.
Oh, Kathy, just.
Man, I'm glad I could be here for that. This is
special. I don't know. You might not be.
You're going to grill me here. Okay.
Before the question, Kathy, just tell us what you do here at the church and how long you've been around and a little bit about your family.
Okay. So I have been at the church here since 2001. So 18 years I've been here in the role of office manager and executive assistant, administrative assistant, whatever. I am married and have two kids and three grandkids.
Classic grandparent.
Classic grandparent.
Kathy actually read this, started reading this book before me. So, Kathy, you got a question.
Yeah, my question is, I'm older, but I'm always looking for new ways to do things. And we've been in the process. We went through the Unstuck process with Tony Morgan, and I noticed he wrote something on the back of your book. You know, we have changed our bulletins. Our bulletin is all geared toward the newcomer now, and we've gone to a newsletter that we mail out weekly that has our events and that kind of stuff. I don't know how effective that is. We've had complaints, of course, from older people that don't have email and that kind of stuff. So we still have to have some printed things for them. But how do you communicate your needs in the church, like your needs for volunteers and your needs for, you know, help in different areas, if you don't do that kind of stuff? I mean, you can do it in a newsletter, but then all of a sudden your newsletter becomes two pages long and nobody's going to sit and read that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what I would encourage you to probably do two things. There's in the life cycle of the calendar year that we have, there are some natural on ramps that exist for the church for helping people engage. And so what I would say is leverage those key times when people are already most likely to make those key decisions to take whatever next step that is. And so the first step I would encourage you to do is to move away from communicating every single individual niche need and use opportunities in the calendar year to communicate the broad needs of every single ministry in your church. So when I got to Westridge, we were kind of in a culture where if we needed more small group leaders, we would say, hey, we need to create an announcement or do a mini message around how we can get the pastor to say, hey, we need more of you to step up to be a small group leader. Or if the nursery was running low and we didn't have enough people, it was, okay, how do we do a social media post to say we need three people to sign up to watch the kids? And what it did is it created this cycle of every individual need being something that became noise, to be quite honest. And so what happened to some people would respond to what they felt was the need, But it also communicated the message that we didn't want, which was, oh, if they're not sharing an announcement about what the need is, then it must be something that they don't need. And so what we started to do is to use the month of January and August to kind of key as using those as two key on-ramp times across the year to use that as a time to say there's a place for you in our church. And there are opportunities all across our church, wherever you are, whatever stage of life you're in, there's a place where you can plug in and get connected to the church by serving. So if you want to serve with kids, we have an opportunity for you. There's a place for you. If you want to get plugged into serving with our student ministry or, you know, passing out bulletins and welcoming people as they come onto the church or on our parking team or whatever it is, there's a place for you to do that. So what that does is it takes a message that you know, let's say you want to communicate for the nursery workers that you need. Instead of taking a message that may only apply to 3 to 5% of the church, you're taking one message and making it apply to every single person in the church. And all of them now know, oh, I have a place where I can get plugged in. And so it helps every single ministry along the way. And then also what that does is it encourages each of the ministry leaders to be able to say, hey, I need to make sure I'm ready to leverage those key times during the year. But I also need to be using all the other times during the year to be actively recruiting and shoulder tapping to get people connected on my own. So I'm not putting all the pressure on the pastor to share the announcement at the end of the service to get more people to get plugged in. They actually have to play a more active role into it. So does that make sense? Or any follow-up questions on that?
That's a good idea. Thank you.
Did I miss it, Phil? Did you actually name some of those times of the year?
Yeah, I think January and August. And some of this may depend August or September, depending on the school calendar in your area. But those are two times where people often hit the reset button on their calendars and their schedule. And so, you know, beginning of the school year in August, that's a time when they are getting back in rhythm. And that's a great opportunity to get people plugged into serving with the, you know, the ministry or certain ministries as they get kind of get back going in the calendar year for the schools. Or January, when people are looking to figure out what to say yes to and no to in their schedules and often more driven around making the important decisions that they feel like they want to make at the beginning of the year. That's a great opportunity for them to get connected as well. And so really the heart of it is to take the micro message and make it a macro message for everybody. So you can do the same thing for you know, even ministry events or like small groups or Sunday schools. Instead of promoting every single one individually, you don't really – that will take so much energy and effort to try to do it justice for every individual opportunity you have. But that's not the biggest barrier. It actually becomes a barrier for people because they are so overwhelmed by all the different things that they just – their biggest barrier is it worth my time? And what's my next step? What do I do about it? And so if you can remove the barriers from people getting plugged into a group or getting serving on a team, if you can overcome the barrier, then you just have to provide a clear on-ramp for how they can take their next step along the way.
So in the beginning of this book, you talk about it needs to be read within a team because communication doesn't belong to one you know, department within a church. What can you just, this is from your own experience now, what does it take to get multiple departments, and even small churches have multiple departments, what does it take to get multiple departments on the same page with communication? Because you're describing, I think, some things I've read from Greg Curtis, who talks a lot about assimilation, go hand in hand with what you're talking about with communication, that you get people to this one location and from there they have an opportunity to sign up for, you know, X, you know, YZ different number of service opportunities. And so that's part of the assimilation strategy. How do you get, and how long has it taken you to try to get everybody on the same page with your communication strategy?
I think at the heart of that, that need that you're sharing about is that there's two things. One is everything we do communicates something, you know, and so it's not every sign, every handout, every announcement, like every event, it communicates something. So communication is a foundational piece of everything we do. And it's not just limited to what a design looks like or what a sign looks like that's hanging up in your church. And so because of that, The communications leaders or people or volunteers that are involved, they really need to not just be a service department for what your church needs. They actually need to be partnering with ministry leaders, because just like let's say a student ministry or a kids ministry is doing a VBS. Well, I'm not going to make the assumption that the kids ministry, my mom was the children's pastor or children's minister as well. So I know this world well. She was incredible at leading those volunteers and leading those kids and providing a great experience. That was her niche. That was her thing. Communication, doing design, that was not. Sure. she wouldn't know what to do when she touched a computer. So how do you partner her with somebody that is passionate about those things, has skills, and has the same heart to accomplish the same things that she wanted to accomplish? If you partner those things together, then all of a sudden you have a chance to leverage all the different areas of communication to help them accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. So communication isn't somebody's job, it's everybody's job. And so to do that, we have to be thinking about partnering with everybody, not just thinking of communications as an administrative service department role. Because the reality is, a lot of the things that we do now in communication, especially digitally, might reach just as many or more people through those communication channels as they will for the people that are actually walking through the doors of your church. And so it's just essential to be able to make sure that the message that we're trying to communicate is synced up with the methods that we're trying to communicate with.
So more and more churches are hiring communications directors now. You would see their role as more of a team person, or someone trying to draw the team together to communicate well?
Yeah, I'd say at best, most communication leaders should be one part service and one part innovation. So there's service in what we do. I mean, for our team, I mean, there's many times where we're working through putting the signs together, making designs, creating the promo video, telling the story, all those things. Those may be service oriented, but we're really trying to innovate using those things to actually accomplish ministry as well. And so for a communications leader, if you're trying to find that volunteer to be able to step into that, it's not always the doer. They should be able to do some things, but sometimes it's marrying the doer with the leader that can actually leverage the greatest opportunities I think we've ever had in communicating the gospel through so many different channels that we have and so many different ways to communicate that message. We have to make sure that that person can actually leverage those things to be able to get that message out to more people. So it's not just about making it look pretty. It's making sure that it can accomplish the win that you're trying to accomplish with your message.
So Phil, at your church, you're the creative, did you say you're the creative arts pastor?
Yeah, that's correct.
So are you essentially the worship leader as well?
I'm not. No. So intentionally for us, my role is to be in the seats in a lot of ways to make sure that what we're actually trying to create and communicate is actually getting accomplished. So the biggest part of my week is trying to set vision and direction for what that is. And then on a Sunday, I'm kind of being able to be the person in the seats to be able to actually see how that stuff is translating in our services. So it's hard for a worship pastor to be objective about how the sound is coming across and how the lighting feels, or how people are engaging with that new song when you're on the stage. And so it allows me to stay big picture and really kind of be the bridge and glue between all the different elements that we do as a church. So I'm with our pastor or with our worship team, with our communications, with our video, all those things. So I just try to help take all those things and make sure we're telling one story with everything we do.
So basically worship pastors were originally just worship pastors, right? And then when we started doing set design and more stuff around the building and the different arts, we kind of changed the name to creative arts pastor. But now it's gone to where you're not even involved in the worship ministry musically as a creative arts pastor. So how do you guys define creative arts?
I'm not on the stage, on that level, but I'm very actively involved in everything that we do on that level. So in a lot of ways, I'm leading our services in our specific setup, where I'm helping meet and lead are, you know, with our worship team. So I'm giving the first 10% and the last 10%. I'm trying to give the vision around where we're heading based off of where, you know, I'm based off of what I'm trying to accomplish with the service, or in conjunction with our senior pastor as well, or whoever's speaking that day. I want to make sure that we're being really clear about that first 10% of what we're trying to do. And then I'm trying to be really clear about the last 10% of, here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's the win of this moment or this service. Here's what's going to be the filter around the songs that we select. And so then I just get to help lead our team along the way to help make sure that we're actually accomplishing what we're trying to accomplish. So I'm often involved in, you know, we're planning out the worship pastor and I are planning out the songs that we're doing for each of those services over the next 4 to 8 weeks in our consistent rhythm. I'm meeting with the senior pastor to make sure that we're setting him up well for what he's speaking on that day. If he needs a song before or after, or making sure he's feeling comfortable so he can focus on the message. I'm leading and working with our communications team to make sure that we're communicating the things that we need to that week and making sure it all flows and fits into the service in a way that doesn't feel like it's obtrusive or anything like that. So in a lot of ways, I'm kind of serving as maybe a producer in that way to make sure it all actually fits together in that way.
So let's bring it down for the small church pastor who has 100 people, 50 to 100 people in their church. They have a part-time person who helps them with administrative tasks, maybe actually nobody who helps them with administrative tasks. What should that man or woman prioritize in this whole rethinking communications for their church? Let's say they've got a nominal website. There's so many social media platforms, so many different ways to communicate. And you have that. You have a graphic in your book about that, where it used to just be, what was it, spoken or print?
Yeah, just what happens in the service, yeah. and what's printed when people get to the service.
And now in the world we live in, there's like 7 different ways that people can hear it or more. So in terms of prioritizing, suggest to the small church pastor how he or she should think about rethinking communication in their church.
Where I would suggest, if I was sitting with any of you in that situation, I would just say that more is not always better. Less is so clarifying, not only for you, but for the people in your church that are trying to engage there. So what my first step would be is to and I give a template here in the book if you grab that to be able to help make this easier, but you don't have to use that to do what I'm asking to do. I would say take every week of the year and focus on the 1 to 2 key things you're trying to communicate over those times in the year, and build everything around those things. So if it's 1 to 2 things, let's say like for leading into beginning of the year. That might be taking the month of January, and those 1 to 2 things for each of those 4 weeks are getting people connected into the group opportunities and serving opportunities in your church. Maybe February is focused on the 1 to 2 things of getting people connected into outreach and missions. In March, that one thing, that one focus area for you may be just Easter. How are you leveraging your communication around helping people to connect and engage through the Easter services that you have in your church? So take each week and each month of the year and focus on those 1 to 2 things, and then look at the communication channels that you have. So that might be your stage announcements and your social media and your website. You know, that may be all that you're starting with or something. Just as you're using those platforms, be thinking about how are you telling the story of those 1 to 2 things across each of those channels. And so by doing that, what it does is it does force you to simplify things, because it can't be that you can't communicate everything. And the reality is, if you're overwhelmed by all those things, so are all the people that are trying to keep up with you as well, too. So if you're overwhelmed, so is your audience. So if you can simplify those things and clarify to say, hey, here's how we're using our church-wide communication. We're going to focus on those things that impact 80% or more of the people that we're communicating with, or it's a key on-ramp to our church and accomplishing our vision. Then everything else, we're just lifting all of our ministry leaders up to say, hey, you are the key visionary communication leader for all those areas. And the best way to communicate those things is to provide a great event or great experience and encourage people to spread the word and share share word of mouth, because that's how most people are going to hear about it anyway, no matter how many announcements you do. So it just simplifies things at a lot of different levels, and it allows you to, instead of making your website about, you know, clarifying the 800 things that you have going on in January, what you're really trying to do is make sure you're really doing a good job of communicating those one to two things. And then I would say phase two is making your website be the hub for your ministry. And so it may be that in March somebody actually wants to get connected to serve at your church, but you don't happen to be communicating that from stage that day. Well, if somebody is greeting that person and hears about it, you need to give that person a hub, a place where they can find out about it and take a next step. So that's where your website can really be your focused area to communicate how people can take a next step in your church. And so keep that simple, keep it really streamlined, and remove barriers along the way. But I think what those two things allow you to do is it allows you to focus really tight and small on a few things that you can really do well, and then allows you to grow and expand as you engage more volunteers or you're able to build on the things that you've been able to build on by focusing on your communication. And I think your results and your time is going to be far more effective than it was before.
So one to two things each month that we're focusing on. You said,
and for you, it may be each week.
Yeah, you said each week.
Just saying, yeah. But it tends to be a lot of the things that you communicate. If it's worth communicating once, it's worth communicating more than once, because people don't come every week. So if you're not speaking to everybody just because you shared it at one of your services.
Yeah. So one to two things each week or each month, and then use your website as your communications hub. You didn't say, did you say communications hub, or did you say some other kind of hub?
Yeah. Yeah, your hub.
Okay.
Phil, this is wonderful content. It makes me all very nervous, if I'm honest with you, because the idea of installing some of these ideas is difficult. But here's the thing, and this is for our listeners. Phil's right. Like, you're right. And so it's hard to think about doing some of these changes. It's difficult to think about tackling your website, about streamlining your communication. I know that there's that one guy who sits in the third row on the left-hand side of your church, and if you stop reading your bulletin every week, he's going to stop putting in his $20 check. I know that that's all true, but Phil's right. And so you're not doing yourself or your church any favors by listening to this and going, man, wouldn't that be sweet if we could do some of that stuff? It's hard work to change. It's hard work to start doing different things than what you've done before. And so I like what you just talked about, Phil. You don't have to swallow the ocean in one gulp. You start small and build a little bit of momentum. And then hopefully over time, you're able to tackle the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And maybe your church is never going to look like quite what Phil describes in his book, which I would encourage you to pick up. Because, Phil, you got a pretty big church, and most of our audience is never going to have that. But you can still have good communication on a smaller scale. So, Phil, I just appreciate I appreciate your time and so much of the wisdom that you're sharing.
Will you allow me to go on a brief
rant? Please.
Okay. So first, really, really appreciate that. Now, I would say I know most people do not like change. The vast majority of people don't like change. And it's especially when you're talking about in the church. Church leaders, it's hard to have change because it means that's one more thing that's added to your list that you have to manage, and most people are already overwhelmed. And so I fully see that and recognize that, and that's the heart from what I kind of tried to lay out there in the book. Is it's not about if you're a small church or big church; it doesn't matter. Change is hard, but it's worth it, because I think when you look at this unique time that we have right now. Like never before have we been able to, at the click of a button, communicate with hundreds and thousands of people. Never before have we been able to do that. And I think right now we have some of the greatest opportunities we've ever, ever had to expand the gospel and communicate the message that God's given us. Jesus actually said, go into the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. And we have more tools now than ever to actually do that. And so for us, it takes leaders in the church, whether you're a volunteer, part-time pastor, full-time pastor, small church, big church, you care about the message, right? Like, we all care about the message. We have the greatest message in the world. So we don't have a message problem. We actually just have a message delivery problem. Yeah. And that's not just for the communications person to be able to own all that. That's really everybody's job. And so we all have a role to play in that. So it's not easy. Change isn't easy, but it's worth it when you know that the things that you communicate now may look different than it did 30 years ago, but now there's actually opportunities to reach more people than ever before. But it does take maybe a different playbook that is going to have to be used than what happened before. So if leaders in the church can take this and instead of being scared about all the change, but actually look at it as the greatest opportunity that we've ever had, really incredible things can happen. Because I think what we have is we have tons of different opportunities to leverage these communication tools and use communication as a way to get our message out to more people than ever before. So it's going to take work. It's going to take leadership, but it's worth it. It's just worth
it. Hey, Phil, just to build, now I kept waiting for the rant. You're way too nice. You're just way too
When I rant, it's not like that. That was good stuff.
So you said we don't have a message problem. We have a message delivery problem. And going outside of just communication, the ministry of communication in the church, we don't have a message problem. We have a method problem in too many, right, of the ministry areas of our church. Where people are always concerned that the message is changing because they hear it differently or because we're living it out or doing it or ministering differently, when in reality the message is always the same. It's the methods that we need to update. And your book is full of communication methods that need to be updated. So, Phil, if somebody wanted to follow you online or catch up with you, where would they go?
Yeah, if you want to check out the book, you can just go to rethinkcommunicationbook.com, and that's a place where you can get the links to any of the, you know, Amazon or any place where you can grab the book there. Not Audible yet. So, it was sucked around. So check it out there. And also, if you grab the book, I leave my phone number in the back. So feel free to text me there if you have questions or are angry at me or anything like that. Feel free to shoot me a message. You can do that there. I get texts almost every single day from that. So I would love to hear from you on that way. But also feel free to just email me, phil@philbowdle, B-O-W-D-L-E. .com. And if you have any questions or anything here that you wanted to follow up on, feel free to reach out to me there. And have a blog as well, philbowdle.com.
Very cool, Phil. Brave move putting your number in the back of the book.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear you're getting responses to that, though. That's cool stuff.
Hey, I got a call from John Maxwell because of doing that. So it was forever worth it. That's for just sure. That reason.
And you got an email from Jeff Cady.
Wow.
Exactly.
Jeff Cady.
Exactly.
Say it ain't so. Phil, thanks so much for your time. It's been great talking to you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it, Phil Bowdle. The book is Rethink Communication. The website is rethinkcommunicationbook.com. If you add the /resources, you can get some resources there. I think he asked for your email address, but hey, wouldn't we just want to give Phil our email address since he's given us his cell phone number? So I was easily able to contact Phil and to book him for this episode. My executive assistant, Kathy, has read the book and is really excited about it. I've read maybe the first quarter of the book. We've ordered copies for all of our staff, and we are going to be going through this book in the coming months. We have a special planning retreat scheduled in just a few weeks, and we're going to take that book with us. We're going to be going over portions of the book, and we're going to begin to implement the ideas that Phil lays out, because one of the things that we've noticed in the last year and a half is that communication is always a challenge. I think if you're in local church ministry, you know, communication is a challenge. Just because somebody's present doesn't mean that we have their attention. We may have their attendance, but not their attention, as Phil said. And sometimes we can get people's attention best when they're not even in the building. So check out the book, Rethink Communication, at rethinkcommunicationbook.com. Or, like I did, and like we've ordered, on Amazon. Hey, thanks for being a part of what we're doing here at 200 Churches, trying to give ministry encouragement to pastors of small churches.
You've heard me talking about getting healthy. If you've not heard the episode, it's episode 305. Episode 305, my conversation with Dave Bush, talks about how I was able to get better health, lose some unwanted weight that I've been carrying around, honestly, for decades. And if you go on our website to the post for episode 305, there's a link there for you to respond if you want to get involved with some of the pastors that I'm coaching to get healthier. I'm so excited. Pastor Scott just recently announced his 35th wedding anniversary, and that 12 weeks after being on the coaching program with me, he is down 56 pounds. Makes me so, so happy that I can share and just having even a small part in that kind of success. So, hey, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you being here, and we'll see you next week on the 200 Churches Podcast.
My name is Angela, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you haven't already, you should subscribe to our weekly email at 200churches.com and to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You know it. We'll be back next week with another amazing and encouraging episode just for you. Until then, may God bless you as you lead and love His church.
Hey there. How's it going?
Phil, pronounce your last name so we don't goof it up.
Bowdle.
Bowdle. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. I won't hold you to it, though. Most people don't get it right, so I'm used to that by now.
We'll get it. We'll get it right now. Phil Bowdle.
You got it.
I had to restart my Mac, Phil. You know how these things go.
Oh, I know how it goes. Yep.
Thank you.
All good.
So I'm here with my executive assistant, Kathy, and...
Hey, Kathy.
Hi.
And my co-host, Johnny Craig.
I'm not your executive co-host?
Not really.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine.
Actually...
Executive to the co-host,
that's,
maybe.
I wish I had that status.
Actually...
Quite true. Office style right there, you know.
Johnny and I are co-hosts, yeah. So neither one of us is, you know, we're co-founders, co-hosts of the podcast.
Well, that's great. Well, it's good to be here with you guys today, for sure.
Well, Phil, Johnny always gives me grief because I always say, let's not talk about anything until we start recording.
That is a Jeffism.
So, because a lot of the good stuff goes away in the pre-talk, and then you forget to say it when we're recording, so...
Sure.
Are you ready?
Well, I'm ready. The only question I would have for you is I just want to make sure I know who your key audience is, just so I can make sure I'm speaking to them. So can you just kind of sum that up
yes.
for me of who you feel like most people are that are leaning into this and listening?
Yeah, most of them will be pastors of churches under 200.